Man, here's the other problem for the Big 12. I'm still thinking about the end of that conversation with Derek Young. The problem for the Big 12 is that Twitter exists, and losing three games to the Sun Belt in one day, that's a made-for-Twitter thing to happen. That's a very tweetable bite of information to get out there, and all of the jokes can circulate. Yes, like, I get it, the spotlight's there. A lot of people saw the games because, hey, it was college football that was on, and there weren't very many other games going on, certainly of significance. That's a factor. But it's also in this world in 2020 where stuff spreads as fast and as quickly as it does, and everybody is waiting, desperately waiting to get their jokes off. That's what makes it worse, because everybody wants to jump in and pile on. We all as humans have, you know, the natural predisposition to look at the car crash as you're driving by it. Everybody wants to go be a part of it. Natural human inclination is a factor there. And so in the age of Twitter, doing something like what the Big 12 did in one day, it's going to get your name dragged through the mud more than it normally would. And even if you want to dismiss that and say, hey, it's just Twitter, it's just a bunch of trolls, it influences things. It does. I think we've seen that from the Big Ten, right? Like, everything that's happened on Twitter and the use of social media and the Big Ten's fight to get football back, eventually it broke through and it worked. And they got football back. And a lot of that was noise that was happening on Twitter. And very obvious that the Big Ten was using mouthpieces of national college football reporters on Twitter as well to get their point across, because it does have meaning. And I'm a part of it too. Like, listen, I was there for all the jokes on Kansas and Iowa State during the game on their games on Saturday. So I am not in any way saying that I am above that or better than that, but just simply pointing out that's another part of the problem for the league and its perception issues. Back here, hour two of the game. John Kurtz, Stephen Schaefer with you. Tweet me at JL Kurtz. You can tweet me at the Game KMAN as well. You know, I realize, like, I want to keep giving the show account out there at the Game KMAN, but most of the time I'm checking my mentions as opposed to the show mentions. It's a little bit easier, so at JL Kurtz if you want to chime in there. I said this to Derek in hour one of the show, and I'm glad that he confirmed it, but I think K-State is a team that on Saturday was dealing with more distraction issues than they were X and O issues. Jimmy's and Joe's, I mean, K-State has some of that. There's definitely some of that going on, right? I was just during the break watching Jonathan Adams, Arkansas State's wide receiver, talk with Reggie Bush from Fox College Football, this like 9-minute interview that he's doing with him. And K-State had nobody that looked like Jonathan Adams. K-State does not have a receiver, really. I guess Jabastian Taylor kind of does. K-State doesn't have a dude like that on their roster, and certainly not in the defensive secondary. So there are some of those issues, yes. But I think distractions played a huge role in what was going on Saturday. Like, I think there are distractions that are going on for everybody in college football, but I think distractions combined with just, when I say distractions, I'm encompassing everything. The pandemic, the unique circumstances that we're playing college football in right now, the social justice stuff that has been going on. And when you take all of that into account, I think when you are a team breaking in a brand new offensive line and still only in year two of a new coach, it affects you more than it does other schools. Kind of like how I said that it affects K-State more on the recruiting trail to not be able to bring guys in on visits than it does other schools, because you have more that you need to sell when they actually get here on a visit than other schools do. And you can call it excuse making. I would call it just a reality. But there was a quote from Chris Klieman's press conference earlier this week that really had me zeroed in on, hey, I think this was more about distractions than it was X's and O's.
We've had a lot of conversations amongst our staff, a lot of conversations with the team. We didn't practice yesterday. We met an awful long time with players, leadership council, to team meetings, to unit meetings, to position meetings, and really had some tough conversations. I believe moving forward, there's going to be some positive things coming out of those conversations.
To be honest, that's a quote that should have received more run from us earlier in the week. That's the kind of thing that tells me that this is not just about X's and O's. Because if it were about X's and O's and where K-State was at and guys, you know, even if it's just being out of position, whatever you want to say, didn't have the guys prepared right, like, you'd be in the film room and on the practice field the next day at practice, the next week at practice. Instead, K-State was, it sounds like, having heart-to-heart meetings. Well, that's more about effort and focus to me than it is you need to know what you're doing out there on the field and we need to have a better scheme and guys need to be. I think you table some of that stuff and say, all right, this is a conversation that needed to happen because guys just weren't locked in and focused and ready to go. And that's why you saw a pretty sloppy, undisciplined brand of football out there. For instance, I mean, let's take the height of the sloppiness, which is 8 penalties for 85 yards, and especially the way that some of those happen, like Jax Dineen's play. I mean, I am a guy that's all for intimidation and having an edge to you, which I think when some of the penalties happened, for instance, at Kansas last year, K-State was still towing the right side of that line, like just having some edge to them. Like Harry Trotter scoring on Kansas and he gets flagged for a little too much of a celebration. Like, I think that was K-State having an edge to them, and they drilled Kansas. But when you lose and when you have too much of it, like K-State did on Saturday against Arkansas State, it looks pretty bad pretty fast. And Jax Dineen is a prime example of that. Like, you can't be doing that, man. I'm going to be here to defend just about anybody if they're trying to do something in the name of intimidation. But, like, we know, Jax, you cannot do that in college football in 2020. I think that was pretty bad. I was asking Chris Klieman a question about the trick plays on his press conference earlier this week, and I was even giving him an out, saying like, hey, you have to balance being aggressive and not getting burned by trick plays, right? And he just cut me off before I even totally had finished the question, basically saying, no, it's about discipline. It's about discipline. There's no aggressiveness. It's about discipline. And that's another element here. Like the discipline for Jax Dineen to not go out and hit somebody like that in that situation. The discipline to read your keys and not get burned on 3 trick plays in the game. The discipline to not commit 8 penalties for 85 yards. Those are the things where K-State a lot of times last year really towed the line but would stay on the better side of the line of being aggressive and intimidating and having an edge versus being sloppy and undisciplined and things that really need to get corrected. Unfortunately, we saw the wrong side of that on Saturday. But it is easy to see how it happened because, like I said, K-State was already bordering on some of that last year, and that was under normal circumstances where you have the normal amount of practices, you had spring ball, you had all of the time in the offseason to be together and just develop your culture and your chemistry. And I think that's a part that doesn't get talked about enough here. Yeah, they had meetings, and they were meeting over Zoom for a while there, but that's not the same as being together and developing the camaraderie and continuing to build the culture of your program. And I think K-State missed out on a lot of that this offseason, and I think that's something that you saw show up on the field. And everything under the COVID umbrella, man. Missed practices in the spring, having players that were missing practices during the week or weeks leading up to the game, just not being able to build continuity with your personnel. I think that matters a lot. And I think we can be as hard on Skylar Thompson as we want, but some of that, some of what we saw between him and his receivers is, I would tell you, are things that if he had more time, if he had a full offseason, if he had spring practice, those things may not happen. Does he develop being on the same page enough with Malik Knowles where Malik doesn't cut off that route early in the game and Skylar throws sails down the sideline on a play that could have been a touchdown? Does Chebastian Taylor know what shoulder to look over to haul in one of those passes from Skylar? Are they just more in sync? I mean, that's when it's that close, those do scream to me, all right, if you have a normal practice circumstance and situation, those are the kinds of things that can be more in sync than what they actually were when we saw it happening. And I do think there's an element at play here, too, of, hey, man, it was a unity game. K-State had all the different messages that they were wearing on the jersey and on the T-shirts and all that stuff. Like, that's something that's been hanging over everybody's head for 3 months. And at K-State, you had the Jaden McNeil tweet situation. That's, I'm sure, still in a lot of people's minds pretty fresh. And those are the kinds of things that, by the way, I would tell you are distractions that are worthy of taking you away from a football game and taking you away from football all the time. That's where some of us are going to disagree, but I think that's important enough stuff happening in the country that I can understand how that would become a distraction. But it is still something you have to deal with. And if I'm building you the equation as to how distractions play a bigger role than what the actual X's and O's were out there on the field, I do think it has to be included. So long story short, I think it's very clear to me that you had a really distracted football team out there on Saturday. And still, if a play or two goes differently, they're winning the game against Arkansas State. And you were playing a very game team from the Sun Belt. Make all the Sun Belt jokes that you want, but Arkansas State is a game enough team. And that's the bottom line. When you factor in everything, you throw everything into that pot, everybody wants one scapegoat to blame. Why'd the loss happen? I think you have to take all that, throw it in a pot, and mix it all together, and you have a big, big fat L soup. And that's what K-State unfortunately had to choke down on Saturday. So, just being honest, I think that's really what K-State was dealing with more on Saturday. I do have to admit to you, just how bad I was in something that I did on the show last week when we come back. Plus, a crazy hire that may be on the way in college football. You're listening to The Game. I did forget in my tease, I have something for you on Skylar Thompson here. Hear me out. Yes, I am a Skylar defender. Yes, I do think Skylar left something to be desired with how he played on Saturday. But I want to make this point. If you're working on a project, whether it's you're trying to write something, a project around the house, sometimes you get stuck and it can be frustrating and you're so close to it and you're involved in it every day and your blood, sweat, and tears are in it and you're saying, like, man, I feel like I need another set of eyes to look at this. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know how good this actually is. I need another set of eyes to actually to look at this. Some unbiased eyes that haven't put their blood, sweat, and tears into this. We now have that with Skylar Thompson. The project in this case is Skylar. We've all been emotionally invested in this over the last 3 or 4 years. And so that skews the way that you see it based on what your preconceived notion is, based on what you want for the program. There are a number of mitigating factors here that can skew how you're actually looking at the situation. And yesterday, 2 days ago, actually, it's now been 2 days, but we had Ian Boyd on the show from Football Outsiders and Inside Texas. Well, Football Outsiders, I mean, those are hardcore football nerds. Ian Boyd is a football nerd, and this guy is pouring through film. He's a Texas fan. He has no predisposition bias to K-State. The guy's a Texas fan. And he seemed really shocked when I told him that Skylar Thompson was a lightning rod of criticism. What did you think of Skylar Thompson's performance? He's like a lightning rod around here. Two people really? Look at him. Well, yeah, think the Alex Smith discussion with the Kansas City Chiefs for a while. I would liken it to that right now. What did you think of his performance?
Well, I don't know if there's a Pat Mahomes that's going to come in anytime soon, so might need to be just some adjustment in the expectations. But I thought he actually looked like he looked a little sharper than a year ago. He had some throws down the field that looked pretty solid. He missed a couple that would have made the difference in the game. But that's another one of those things where it's week one. Kansas State had a lot of disruptions to their practices from COVID. So is this just a matter of him needing more throws with the receivers to really nail down timing?
Like that to me has value. And I know if you're somebody out there that you don't follow it closely enough to know much about Ian Boyd, I guess I understand if you have skepticism about that. I mean, I'm telling you, he's got my seal of approval. And he didn't say that Skylar Thompson was great, but he also thought he was good enough that he was shocked that people would be that critical of him as a quarterback. We're too close to it. We are emotionally invested in it. And if you, especially if you had a position during the quarterback battle 2 years ago and you still have confirmation bias as to what your position was at that point in time, that's going to affect and cloud how you viewed this and seen this over the last few years. Just like if you're somebody like me that wanted desperately for Skylar to be the quarterback 2 years ago, yeah, there's a bias there in how I see it. But I can take Ian Boyd's assessment there of being basically like, yeah, he's a good quarterback. He's not Pat Mahomes. And there's no Pat Mahomes, by the way, that K-State has to throw in there for him. So I think that opinion should matter to you. I think it should carry some weight and should give you a better perspective on how, you know, an unbiased observer who watches a lot of Big 12 football actually views Skyler as a quarterback. And I would throw this in there, too. This was from yesterday. Curry Sexton, a former wide receiver, right? Okay, important point to denote here. Curry Sexton did not play quarterback. He played wide receiver at K-State, and this is what he had to say about Skyler and, in relation to that, the wide receivers.
I think, you know, some of his misses were just as much on the receivers as Skyler. I mean, I can think of three instances where Shabash Taylor and Malik Knowles, you know, were pretty open, and Skyler threw a pretty good ball, but those two guys failed to track the ball in the air. The ball ended up falling over their outside shoulder. There was one instance where, and I know Shabashin's a guy with limited game experience, but there's one instance where the ball was put over his outside shoulder. He didn't even come close to getting his hands on it because he was failing to track it well. So I think, ultimately, you know, are they perfect throws? No. But if you're a Division I Power 5 starting receiver, those are plays that you have to make 9 times out of 10.
And that's a former receiver saying that. We would always think, like, you see it all the time on the corny, like, NFL pregame shows that they have out there. If you're debating a play, was this a great catch? Was it bad defense? Whatever. You know, if it's a former defensive back, he's going to say, well, yeah, just a great catch. The defense was great. He's not going to rip on his guy, right? Or if it's a former receiver, it's going to be, no, it should have been pass interference. That's terrible. And then you say, of course you say that because you're the receiver. Well, the receiver here is defending the quarterback. The receiver here is offering some criticism to the receiver. And by the way, like, I love Sebastian Taylor. I hope he is a total stud the entire year. But if we're talking about what has been accomplished in their careers, Skyler has more cachet in his back pocket than what Sebastian Taylor does at K-State. So be inclined to think, hey, maybe Skyler wasn't the right there. Same story with Malik Knowles on that throw down the sideline. I would lean Skyler on that one before I would Malik Knowles, just based on the body of work that they have laid out so far here at K-State. So you have an outsider looking at it and saying, I don't understand why fans would be so hard on this guy. And you have a former receiver saying, yeah, actually, I think he needs a little bit more from his receivers. I think those should matter in how we view what Skylar Thompson's performance was on Saturday. I don't think it's as bad as the anti-Skyler crowd would make it out to be. Those carry some weight with me. I hope that they do for you as well. Now, if you hated that and you hate me, get ready for this because you have a chance to pile on, because I do have to admit, my John in Vegas picks were absolutely terrible. Absolutely terrible last week. I went 0-4. Not a good start, okay, but 1 week does not a season make. And also, all the excuses that I'm making for the football team this week about a pandemic and about practice time and all of that, that all works its way out onto the field for anybody making gambling picks as well, right? All these different teams, how am I supposed to be able to predict reasonably what's happening in the Coastal Carolina-Kansas game or the Clemson-Wake Forest game when COVID has affected all of those teams? It's very wonky. We don't know what's going to happen. What's up, Matthew McConaughey? It's a woozy. It's a whatsy. How am I supposed to know? Okay, how am I supposed to know? I'm sorry if you took my picks and went 0-4. I would understand if you start to fade every single one of my picks for the rest of the year. But this is how it went down on Saturday. I had the under in Kansas Coastal Carolina. It was 56. They scored 61. So Kansas's little comeback they threw out there in the second half screwed me on that. I had Clemson minus 34. This is the one that really made me angry, and this is the one where I cut myself the most slack for excuses. Clemson, under non-pandemic circumstances, normal year, wins that game by 50. They won by 24. All right, so they didn't cover, but Clemson's a covering machine in games like that against undermanned ACC teams. I am absolutely blaming that one on the pandemic, and there's nothing you can say to change my mind. Now, I had UTEP plus 43. They lost to Texas by 56. This is the one that I look in the mirror and I say, that's on you, dude. That one was on me. All right, if we're breaking this down, me trusting UTEP, which has been, over the last few years, one of the absolute worst teams in all of college football. Me trusting them to cover anything, even if I do have a jaded view of Texas and how they're going to typically perform, that was bad. That was my bad. They lost by 56. 56 points. That was stupid, I will admit. Finally, this one, this is the one, Syracuse plus 23, where I say I was right. The game just didn't quite play out that way. Okay, I had the right side here. Syracuse plus 23. They lost by 25. But they were right on that line, and they were close to covering. And I think I had the right intuition and the right side there. It just didn't work out. So, you know what? I get it. You mix everything together, just like with K-State. It's a big fat L soup. I'm taking a heaping dose of big fat L soup because of, you know, one game where a late comeback and a late surge in garbage time ruins me. I have another game where the pandemic ruins me. I have one game where I'm an idiot, and I have another game where I had the right side, but it just didn't work out. Mix that all together, big fat 0-4 L soup for the first week of John in Vegas. I don't have picks for you yet today. I'm going to save that for tomorrow, in part because normally, I will even admit this to you. I was going to do some picks today, but I started looking at the schedule, and man, it is a... I don't know if you've looked at the college football schedule for this weekend. It is a light, light schedule in terms of substance and good games. Felt like it was going to take me more research anyway, and then on top of this, I had an 0-4 performance. So if it... You know, say I had gone 3-1, hell, even 2-2, last week, this would be different. It'd be like, all right, whatever, I'm confident. Roll me back out there. Let's do it. I'll get another shot back up. You know, reload the gun. Pass me the ball. I'll shoot again. After that first week, it does have me going back in the gym being like, all right, do I need to change my form here? Do I need to tuck the elbow in more? Like, what do I need to do here? What are my adjustments? We have to make some adjustments, but I will get you some John in Vegas picks tomorrow because it was so horrendously awful in week one. Speaking of horrendously awful, that could be the next segment because I told Mitch as he was leaving with K-State Soccer to leave me a number one song of the day for both today and tomorrow. And not only did he leave me a song, he left me his script, you know, his script that he goes through and tries to read every week. Well, I just pester him with, you know, typically degrading things about the song, and he tries to march on through all of the distraction. That now gets to be me trying to read that about this song. So we'll see what happens coming up next. All right. All right. I did not know that this was coming. Didn't listen to it before today. Mitch left me number one songs. Let me present your number one song of the day, according to his sheet of notes here that he left me. This would be Play That Funky Music by Wild Cherry. We got Butt Cherry these days making crappy butt rock. I wonder if Wild Cherry is in that same category. Spent 3 weeks at number one in 1976. Now, yes, I have actually heard this song. I have. I don't know much about it, but I have heard it, and I would say it's okay. Here's the chorus. All right, so you get the idea. It's okay, you know, I mean, like disco era, 1976. Mitch has made the point, and I'm sure he's correct, that if I were... You know, if I were in my 20s in the 1970s, I probably would have been into disco. I'm a sucker for pop music. All right, so this group's name, how about this? The group Wild Cherry, American funk rock band. Oh, funk rock. Okay, so not punk rock, funk rock. I'll be careful with that. One-hit wonder formed in Mingo Junction, Ohio. But how about this? The group's name comes from a box of cough drops. Now, like, what is... I mean, okay, I guess it's fair to say the group's name comes from a box of cough drops, but if they're just wild cherry cough drops, it could have been wild cherry anything. Do the cough drops really get the credit for that? I mean, they could have just seen the wild cherry flavoring on anything. It could have been a Slurpee or something. Like, are we really going to attribute it to cough drops? Anyway. One-hit wonders. They were together, though, from 1970 to 1979 with a total of 14 members. And had a bunch of different lineups, I guess, in all of that. Not much continuity. Sounds like the K-State offensive line, you know? K-State offensive line, not much continuity, having to play a bunch of different players. I realize, you know, we're talking different numbers here with like 8 and 14, but that's what Wild Cherry sounds like. Play That Funky Music was released on Wild Cherry's self-titled debut album, which peaked at number 5 on the Billboard 200. So, you know, I mean, for a one-hit wonder, having an album at number 5 on the Billboard 200, that seems pretty good, right? Seems good. I'm a little bored with this already, but I'm not even halfway through the notes. This actually gives me some good perspective on what's happening when I'm peppering Mitch with hate on these songs typically, because he's got a lot to read through. That's why he just powers through. All right, so Wild Cherry frontman Rob Parisi? Parisi wanted to write a hit song, and his plan was to copy from the best. So he subscribed to Billboard magazine, which charts the hit songs. When it arrived each week, he would pick out a song or two to copy, making it just different enough to avoid getting sued. Okay, well, what are we doing here, Wild Cherry? You're stealing your name from a thing of cough drops, and you're stealing songs from everybody. After some time doing this, he wrote the one that became his number one hit. The song he copied was Fire by the Ohio Players. The Ohio Players. Well, it sounds like they've got a beef here if this guy wrote a number one hit off of them. The Ohio Players. I mean, it feels like when I'm saying that, it should be like the Ohio Players Association. Are these former Ohio State football players? Are these guys play-us that have made themselves a group called the Ohio Players? Wild Cherry was a hard rock band. They had a regular gig at the 2001 Club. And with disco big at the time, their sound didn't go over well. What? I mean, what? This sounds like disco to me. I know you're telling me it's funk rock, but this sounds very much like disco. After one show... Okay, here we go. This is where we're getting to it. After one show, a black audience member shouted, "Play some funky music, white boy." Can you go ahead and roll that again, Steven? Let's just hit it again. Parisi decided they should play some funky music and wrote down the phrase on a bar order pad. They recorded it in Cleveland with a disco sound, drum and bass mixed way up front. The band was concerned about the lyrics, but Parisi insisted on keeping them. Okay, so I feel like these two things are a bit contradictory here. If he stole the song, Fire by the Ohio Players, or Play-Us, whichever you'd prefer, but then at the same time, the song was inspired by somebody yelling, "Play that funky music, white boy," or "Play some funky music, white boy." I mean, that seems original, but yet you're telling me he copied the song. I feel like that doesn't totally jive. And now I've come full circle by using a disco term there, right? Jive? Isn't that a thing? The single was certified platinum by the Recording Industry Association of America for shipments of over 2 million records. It eventually sold 2.5 million records in the United States alone. And this song was listed at number 93 on Billboard Magazine's all-time top 100 songs in 2018. Now that seems like a bridge too far. All right, so the guy's copying songs, eating cough drops, snorting cough drops. I don't know what this guy would have been doing. And you're going to give him a top 100 of all-time song because of it? I don't think this is good enough to be a top 100 of all-time song. Some of these I could understand. Even if I hate on the song, even if I don't like the genre, I get the popularity, I understand how it works. This one does not deserve to be a top 100 song. Like, this seems very... It just seems very gimmicky. That's really the word I'm looking for. It seems very gimmicky. Seems like a gimmicky song. play that funky music. And I think this is rated too high. Overrated. Somebody get me the overrated chant. I don't know. What do you think, Steven?
Well, honestly, yeah, I think it's a little overrated. And I can also see how Mitch wrote it where, you know, they ripped off a song, but it also came from an idea off a notepad. That happens a lot in the music industry, too, where you rip off kind of like the instrumentation, the composure of a song, and add your own little spin to it, which is what this is. But definitely totally overrated. Probably should not have been in the top 100.
Yeah, Rob Parisi. Rob Parisi didn't deserve that, man. Rob Parisi did not deserve... I'll give him a number one song. That's fine. You can have your 3 weeks in 1976. Boy, imagine that. I bet that was a hell of a 3 weeks that guy was doing in 1976 with a number one hit song. But, you know, doesn't need to be remembered forever. Let the record show that my opinion is Rob Parisi should be forgotten for all time. Should be totally forgotten. Ask us anything next. All right, I'm going to pay off a tease here that I gave to you guys earlier and didn't get to when I should have. The college football coaching news here is that Jackson State apparently is finalizing a deal with Deion Sanders to make him their next head coach. Deion Sanders. He was flirted with by Florida State, it sounded like, this past offseason when they went ahead and hired Mike Norvell. Deion Sanders, I mean, he's been working like at NFL Network, right? I mean, no coaching experience here. And this is one of those, like, great for me. It'll be fascinating for me now to watch what happens with Deion Sanders at Jackson State. But if you're, I don't know, if you're a Jackson State fan, maybe that is what you want. You just want some form of relevancy. But if you're talking, I get frustrated when these types of things come up around here where it's like, you know, for the longest time, with K-State basketball, it was like, all right, we need to hire Rolando Blackman. Or we need to hire, you know, Steve Henson, I get more. He at least had been a coach and had some coaching experience. But people get too tied down to either the alma mater or like the star power allure of somebody. A better example I should give you is when I kept seeing, like, hey, there's an opening on K-State's defensive staff. Let's go get Terrence Newman to be the coach. Like, I know Terrence Newman now is coaching in the NFL, but like you can't just be... The reason people suggest that is because he played at the school and he has some level of star power. That doesn't mean that you're getting the best candidate if you're going out and doing that. Like you're just cutting down on so many other good candidates that could be there. And it's just a silly kind of dumb fan thing to do that to me fits in the same category of like fantasy football guy that's like... bragging about his fantasy football team. Like, okay, congratulations. That doesn't take, like, an actual mind for sports to be able to throw that opinion out there. Like, all right, K-State has an opening at receivers coach, right? Like, let's go get Jordy Nelson. Now, Jordy Nelson might wind up being a great receivers coach. I don't know. But he doesn't have experience being a wide receivers coach. Like, maybe just go hire somebody that has the qualifications for the job. Fits into the same box as this does to me with like, hey, let's just go get the biggest star that we can get for the job. This obviously being Deion Sanders. All right, ask us anything. That's not fun. That's not as much fun as this. Some more questions from Pam, who sent these in. Which dead historical figure would you like to trade places with? Oh, man. I would say... There are two that come to mind, two that I'm fascinated with. And you know what? I suppose you can debate me on whether or not they're a historical figure, and it's probably not what Pam was actually looking for. But I'm going to say Tupac or Kurt Cobain. Fascinated by both. Kurt Cobain, like, I like Tupac's music. Oh, Nirvana's okay. But I think Kurt Cobain is fascinating. And in fact, I may choose him because he seemed to have such a complicated mind. Like, what was going on and handling his fame when he didn't really want to be famous and, you know, but, like, at the same time, you kind of do. I've read some of the journals thing that's put together of Kurt Cobain, like, all of his journals, like, put together in a book. It's pretty fascinating. So I'd like to know what that was like. Also, if it can give me any insight to prove that it was, in fact, Courtney Love that had him killed, that'd be great as well. So I choose Kurt Cobain, Pam. That is my answer. Kurt Cobain, dead historical figure I'd like to trade places with. Which dead historical figure would you like to have had a romance with? I mean, that's difficult because I'm not even like a big celebrity crush guy really at all. And then on top of that, you're asking me to go into somebody who's already passed away. Who's a famous, like Marilyn Monroe, maybe? She seemed like a babe back in the day, right? Did she date like Mickey Mantle or something? I'll go Marilyn Monroe, just because I know she was famous and I know she was supposed to be the big celebrity crush at the time, all right? Say Marilyn Monroe. Here's another question. Do you yell at the TV? This is not from Pam. We have burned through Pam's questions, but I appreciate those very much. Do you yell at the TV when people are being stupid or when watching sports or both? A little bit. Certainly in a sporting event, like, yes, I will yell things. I think back to, like, watching the Chiefs play in the Super Bowl. There was a lot of yelling. You amp up the stakes with the game, and it's one of my teams, there's going to be a lot of yelling. But even watching, like, Kansas Coastal Carolina last weekend, there was some yelling, too. Like, I was fired up when Coastal was scoring. I won't lie about that.
I mean, I even yell at the TV when I play Modern Warfare, okay? Like, find me who doesn't yell at the TV for whatever.
Yeah, it seems like that's pretty common. This also, you know, when people are being stupid or when watching sports or both. I mean, you know, people being stupid on TV, you can find that all over the place. But I think some of this is insinuating you're like the guy during a movie that's like, no, don't go in there, don't go in there. I mean, I'm not going to do that. I will be the guy that asks you a bunch of questions during a movie because I'm trying to figure everything out because I just kind of, not a movie guy, and I always want to be that guy that's asking questions so I can know what's happening. What kind of a fantasy house would you like to live in? I will tell you exactly what kind of a fantasy house I would like to live in. It's kind of my dream house / fantasy house, but I want it to be, it's got to be in the mountains. I want it to be like on the side of a mountain, big mansion, amazing views, and the kicker here that's going to be tough with a house on a mountain, I would imagine, I need a full-length indoor basketball court in said house. That's always been my dream. I want to have a place where I can just wake up and walk downstairs and go rain down threes on somebody and get my shot back. Well, it never really leaves. All it would take me is a couple sessions of shooting to get it back. But you know what I'm saying. I would love to be able to do that on a daily basis on the reg in my house. So that's the answer. It needs to be in the mountains, giant mansion, and it needs to actually have a full-length indoor basketball court in it. I'm trying to think. Like, there are some other things I could throw into that. I should probably start updating that because it used to just be, I don't care where it is. I just want a big house with a basketball court in it. Now I've taken a real liking to the mountains in Colorado and all that. So it's like, okay, a house in Colorado and the mountains, and I've combined those two. But I could probably find some other more extravagant things to throw in there to make that answer a little bit better. Appreciate Steven's help today. We're back tomorrow.